Hi everyone, we had a little bit of audio trouble on this episode, but hope you can bear with us for this half hour and we'll get it back to normal next time. I'm Manton Reese.
And this is Daniel Chalkin.
And this is Core Intuition. You'll have too much press.
New app from Manton Reese on the App Store as of last night, Tweet Library.
Yep, perfect timing.
And for those of you who haven't already checked it out because you're, you know, following our Twitter action, it is basically another Twitter app. That's basically all it is.
Not another one.
So anyway, if you thought that Twitterific and Tweety, Tweety Now Twitter, all the millions of other ones out there weren't enough, we have one more for you called Tweet Library. So what makes it different, Manton?
What makes it different is it focuses around archiving your own tweets and building collections of tweets to share with other people. Archiving collections, and it's also got filters and some other fancy stuff. But I mean, it started life as not a regular Twitter app. It started as this, I wanted to have a backup of my own tweets. And I wanted to do this other stuff, like be able to curate and pick tweets out for my timeline without just favoriting them. Then I quickly realized it had to be like a full Twitter app too. So it's dragged on and on and on, and it turned into a much larger project than I really wanted it to be.
Well, it's still so exciting to get to 1.0. I know I was talking with you as you were developing it, and it has kind of grown, but still, I applaud you for cutting as much as you could to actually release. And that's always a difficult aspect of any 1.0.
Yep, had to ship it eventually. I mean, I was risking just getting completely burned out, and I had to put it out there and see what people thought of it before I could go any further on it. And I'm really proud of the 1.0, but there's definitely a lot of stuff I still need to do. And there's a couple bugs that, of course, slipped in there. That's the problem with the whole app review cycle is I submitted to Apple and I made a flurry of last minute changes, which of course I shouldn't have done, but I did. And then I submitted to Apple. And then a couple days later, of course, I noticed some bugs that I missed. But then you're forced with this choice of, well, do I pull the binary from, you know, iTunes Connect and fix some bugs and resubmit it, in which case I go back to the end of the line, or do I just let it go and then try to quickly turn around a bug fix update?
So you've got like a bug fix update just like waiting in the wings now?
Sort of. It's not final yet because I really also wanted to see what the reaction to the app was. I mean,
right,
is it going to resonate? Are people going to like it? I mean, who knows?
See what the top three maybe, you know, feature requests or complaints are and see if you can squeeze some of that into.
Yeah, exactly. Try to fix a few things and address anything that came up that my beta testers missed. But so far, so good. I mean, I'm really happy with, I mean, it just went live last night, but I'm really happy with the response. And thank you, everybody who retweeted it and mentioned it or whatever.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I'll tell you, I'm sure you've already heard this. I think I've already told you this privately. I'm sure you will hear this from customers. So just to get your perspective on this on the air, what do you say to somebody like me who might be interested in this app, but, you know, I'm one of these Twitter users who is both, not the newest Twitter user, you know, on the block and not the least prolific Twitter poster on the block. So, I have far more tweets in my Twitter history than Twitter, the company, currently lets me or you on my behalf get access to.
Yep.
So this is kind of a conundrum. I feel that kind of like control, that desire for control, the ability to search all of my tweets, you know, the having a permanent archive of my own tweets would be great. And if you could help me keep those on my iPad, that's awesome. But as you and I know, I can't really do that right now because I don't, you know, I didn't have Tweet Library before. And at this point, all of my really old tweets are lost to the whims of Twitter opening up access to them.
Yep.
So what do you think? What should we do? Is there still any point in me using Tweet Library?
Every time you post a tweet, because you're over the 3,200 limit, you lose another old one. So if you start using it now, at least you'll have the last 3,200 and then anyone's forward. Whereas if you start using it a month from now, you've got another 100 tweets that you've lost. So I still think it's useful, but it is a problem. And the funny thing is, so I originally prototyped this on the Mac like 2 years ago, because I came back from WWDC and I wanted to post to my blog with all these tweets that people were doing at the conference. And so I wrote this little Mac app that would help me gather them and convert them to HTML. And that's sort of the collections and the curation kind of side that, of Tweet Library. But I never shipped it because I thought surely any day now Twitter will be opening access and adding these kind of features. And they never did. And then so the iPad came out and I thought, oh, this would be a fun app to do. And so I sort of resurrected it and shipped it. But eventually Twitter has got to open this stuff up.
Yeah, well, you keep dreaming, buddy.
You're right.
No, but you, in all seriousness, I like your answer. It's very compelling, actually. You know, sure, you've lost all your early tweets, but might as well start saving them now. And actually, that is that speaks to my skepticism about Twitter ever opening up the access themselves. You know, maybe someday down the line, I know the, what was it, like the Smithsonian or something has has access to them, or maybe we'll get them down the line somehow, but...
Yeah, so that's the thing. The Library of Congress, I guess, has a copy. I don't know what they're doing with that copy. And also Google, I think, has a full copy now.
Oh.
So, and this is something I've been meaning to look into, actually, because I might be able to tie it into the app to get older tweets archived. Uh-huh. So if a tweet falls off your timeline and you just go to Google and try to find it, you can't. It's gone. And that's one of the reasons I built the collections publishing thing in a tweet library. So you can pick some collections of tweets. It pushes it to tweetlibrary.com. And then from there, it can be indexed and people can find it. But the funny thing is, if you go to Google and then you go down, there's some option that says like status updates or something. You can search, I believe, older tweets.
Oh.
Maybe. It's something I need to look
something
into.
Something to look into. Okay.
So in theory, Google does have, if not all, they have a whole bunch of the archive, and it would be nice to hook into that somehow. But it's not, it's kind of a separate thing. It's not like part of the normal Google index. So if you just search for something in Google, you won't find it.
Well, you know, speaking of Tweet Library, I announced a few minutes ago on Twitter that I was waiting to record with you. And we have a question, actually, from Twitter user Josh Puets, or Puets. I don't know exactly how he pronounces that, but he asks, why no universal version of Tweet Library? Is that a philosophical thing, or is this just a 1.0 get it out the door limitation?
Yeah, mostly just a 1.0 get it out the door. I wanted to focus on one, you know, UI. And I built the app really because I wanted to do something on the iPad. The iPad came out. I thought this is a really cool device. Obviously, for everyone paying attention, the iPad came out like many months ago, so I've been working on this way too long. I don't know. I guess I should probably do an iPhone version. I don't know if all of the UI will fit perfectly. I might have like sort of a mini kind of version for the iPhone, like it just kind of complements it.
Well, not to give too much publicity to your competitors, but I thought that the way Twitterific handles this works pretty well, where, you know, they sort of reuse a lot of the same popover UI as individual screens, you know, as the drill down.
Yep.
And I think that would probably work. Something like that would work for Tweet Library as well.
I really like how Twitterific did that. It makes a lot of sense. And I actually, even though they took out a bunch of features in the new iPhone version, because they kind of started over, I prefer the UI. I think it's pretty nice.
Yeah, me too.
So I don't know. We'll see. I mean, a bunch of people have also said, why isn't this on the Mac? You know, why isn't there a Mac version? Because this would make more sense, you know, on the desktop maybe.
Right.
For now, it's iPad only. And, you know, we'll see what happens. Depending on the app, it can be a real challenge to do a universal version. I mean, actually, since we've last talked, I've shipped not one but two iOS apps. The other app was Bookshelf, the ebook reader for Vital Source, which I blogged about a little bit, but and that was universal, but it was the kind of the opposite. I made the decision that it's an iPhone app that's going to work on the iPad too without, you know, pixel doubling, but very, very few iPad specific UI things, just because you kind of have to build the app twice sometimes, depending on how you do the UI. For Twitterific, it worked out great. It was a nice fit for how they did popovers, but for some apps, you kind of have to redo the app, and it's a challenge. And then you've got to test on both devices, and just, I mean, it adds a whole bunch of time to development that I didn't feel like I could do for this one.
Well, you know, I've mentioned to you, I just said one of my hesitations about using tweet library is that whole thing about my old tweets. But the universal question sort of resonates for me too, because I've discovered more and more I'm not using my iPad, and I think it shifted a lot. Well, maybe some of it's just the novelty wearing off. Some of it is, to be honest, I think I mentioned earlier that, like, sometimes if Henry is playing, Henry's my 2-year-old, if he's playing in the same room as me, I noticed when he was younger, I was able to use the iPad and not, like, invoke the wrath of Henry. You know, I guess he's gotten a little bit more, like, involved in playing with his toys and sort of, you know, doing his own thing, so that I find I can use my laptop and get away with it sometimes. And then the other thing is, ever since the iPhone 4, you know, I think I share this with many people, like the iPad has sort of lost some of its luster because of the beautiful high-resolution screen on the iPhone 4, the multitasking. You know, I know some of this stuff, like the multitasking, is supposed to be coming in an update to the iPad. But I think Manton, you could sign me up as one of these people that might use the iPhone version more consistently than the iPad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I've noticed, actually, there's some other apps it was OmniFocus from the Omni Group. They have an iPad version that came out recently. I didn't even buy it. You know, I actually just mm-hmm. recently got back on this OmniFocus kick, and I bought the iPhone version. To be honest, that's the device that's with me. And I realized Tweet Library is a different sort of focus than that. And there is some advantage to the larger screen for sort of perusing and browsing your tweets and stuff. But for me, it's like the thing that hasn't caught on for me with the iPad is I'm not actually going to take it anywhere. If I go somewhere, it's my MacBook. And if I stay home, it's my MacBook. If I go somewhere without a computer, it's my iPhone.
Yeah.
And maybe that's unusual, but to me, it's just, I don't know. It doesn't add enough. And I've mentioned this before, but I can't type quickly on an iPad.
Yeah.
And to me, that's like having my arms tied. It's like, it just doesn't feel good.
Yeah. It's kind of a problem. And I think there are a lot of people, they're just like you, what you said. I sort of forced myself to use the iPad and figure out what was good and bad with it, which we've talked about before on the show. And now I figured out what I like about it, and I use it all the time. I mean, constantly. So it's like, it's my Twitter and RSS and Instapaper and casual kind of browsing away from the computer device. So I take it everywhere, even if I'm going to a coffee shop to work. And I have my MacBook, obviously, and obviously I have my phone. I still have my iPad just because it's part of sort of my workflow now, but that's not the case for a lot of people. So I don't know. We'll have to see. An iPhone version makes sense. The other funny thing is the pricing issue, which I wasn't sure about, because, I mean, you mentioned Omni Focus, which has a separate iPhone version and a separate iPad version. So you have to buy the iPhone version's like $20, and then the iPad version's another $40. So you can kind of pick and choose, and they're priced for the device. My app is $10, and I was nervous about doing this because every other Twitter app is $5 or less. But I think it was the right decision because it's not just a normal Twitter app. It has this different kind of focus that I think is possibly more valuable to people in terms of the archiving thing. It's not mainstream. Like, I don't want everyone to buy it. I want just these serious, like, Twitter people to check it out. But if I did a universal version and then it shows up in the iPhone store, it's a $10 iPhone app, which is kind of crazy. I mean, it's like you're on the iPhone, you're used to the 99-cent Twitter app or free or whatever. And so I'm not sure how that would be perceived either. For the iPad, I think it the pricing fits better, but I don't know. I mean, that's the thing about, like, if I did a universal version, is it good enough to be just a standalone iPhone version if you don't have an iPad, or is it really the iPad UI is the primary UI and the iPhone version is just for existing customers who also want it on their phone? And depending on that choice, I think it'll be perceived differently.
Yeah, I think you're on the right track to not go after the sort of mass market with this. And really, I think when you're talking about iPhone and iPad a little less maybe, but when you're talking about iPhone, like you said, there's that pricing thing. But I really think you can only really make a living on a, you know, a low-priced iPhone app if it is a huge mass-market app.
Yep.
And it, ideally, it has to not only be mass-market, but it has to be a mass-market hit. So it's a really tough, you know, the 99-cent support-your-family app is hard to imagine unless it's a real novelty sort of hit.
Yeah, and the problem with the hit too is that it seems like it's you got to constantly be coming up with the next hit, you know,
right?
The next gimmick that'll go to the top of the charts, and then you know it's going to fall back because people lose interest, and then you got to come out with another 99-cent gimmick app
right.
that goes to the top, and that doesn't sound interesting to me. I'd rather sell a smaller number of copies, but hopefully more consistent day to day.
Yeah, and I think what you did was right too, as far as going for $9.99. It's as we've learned, it's the premium price for things on on the App Store.
Yeah.
But what's good about that is psychologically, I think it sort of sets the app up to have higher perceived value,
mm-hmm.
and you know, folks like Omni Group have set the standard very high for pricing, and you know, I think their Omni focus for the iPhone even may have been $20. I can't remember right off the top of my head.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I don't know about you, but as I browse the App Store, I do give a little, I sort of wince, it's true, when I see like a $10 or $20 app. I'm a victim of the pricing psychology as much as anybody, but I have to admit that if it looks like a professionally done app and it's $10 or $20, that is it's sort of a plus for me. Then, you know, if I see something that says 99 cents, I sort of expect there to be a catch. I expect there to be ads, or I expect it to be crappy, you know?
Like,
why is this app only 99 cents?
And right.
I may be in the minority asking that question. Obviously, you and I think about pricing a lot more than the average iPhone software purchaser. But, you know, I think at some point, it's just like you got to sell, you know, one app at $10 instead of 10 apps at 99 cents and see how that goes. I hope it makes you a good amount of money.
Yeah, we'll see. It's the funny thing about the App Store is you don't really know until the next day. I did get numbers from last night, but it was only out for a couple hours. So, and the other sort of gamble I made, not gamble, but like in the Twitter market, Tweety, or the official Twitter app for iPad, it will be permanently at number one free social networking apps, right? I mean, you can't dethrone that. It's like the free, it's called Twitter and it's free.
Right.
But you have the top paid apps and you have the top grossing. And I wasn't expecting to really get into the top paid, although I did bump into there this morning. But I was hoping to get maybe into the top grossing because of the math of the pricing, at least for a little while, just so that it bumps up on people's radar. I'm not expecting to stay there.
Right.
But the nice thing about those separate lists is that you don't really have to compete directly with the free apps because, I mean, Twitter is number one and maybe it's downloads thousands of copies. Maybe you're in the top few on the paid app, and it almost looks like you're competitive, even though they're pushing like way, way more downloads because it's free, but it still feels like it's discoverable if you can bump up in the top paid or the top grossing lists.
That makes sense.
Whereas if you're competing in the free category, I mean, you're going to be wiped out. So.
Oh, do I detect a note of gratitude to Apple for something about the App Store?
Well, sort of. I mean, they can do a lot more to help people discover apps. But it is nice that they added the top grossing because that wasn't there in the first year. And I know that if that wasn't there now, you know, I would have no chance of sort of reaching the audience
right.
who just kind of is randomly browsing around. But the other funny thing is by being iPad only, there's actually hardly any iPad apps that get pushed to the store on a day-to-day basis. Like I think when mine was approved, there was only maybe two or three other apps in the social networking category that were pushed live. And so in theory, I will stay on the recent list for a little while. I don't know, maybe a week or something. So we'll see what that means. I don't know what that means yet, but it can't hurt.
Well, eventually, Manton, we're going to be competing for the social networking charts.
Oh, yeah.
So watch out, man.
Good segue. How is it going?
Well, it's going okay. I've actually been working on sort of like, so for listeners who don't know, that there's something that happened recently, which is Apple sort of is cleaning house. And for the last couple of years, there's been this situation in the App Store where you can essentially add an app as a developer and then neglect to upload the binary. And what this effectively does is allow people like me who have an existing, trademark such as Mars Edit to essentially reserve that name and prevent anybody from casually going in and adding their own app called Mars Edit. So I, of course, when I discovered this, I went in and added all of my apps, even ones I wasn't really sure if I wanted to do an iPhone version for. And as time has gone on, I've just been sitting on those, sort of slowly working on some of the ones I know I want to do, like Mars Edit and Black Ink. Then lo and behold, about a month ago, Apple sends out an email, presumably, and anecdotally it seems to be true, to anybody who at that point had one of these so-called squatted names and who had been holding on to it for 60 days or more at that point. So, of course, I had mine for like 2 years. I was definitely in this category. And it's depressing to think about that it's been, 2 years since I had ambitions of doing my apps. But anyway, long story short, I was motivated by this to... The letter of Apple's demand is, if I don't upload an app by October 10th, which, as we know, is coming around, a few days from now, then they will take back my name and give it to, back to the pool of available names. Now, it's not even clear. They don't, of course, vague as usual. It's not even clear whether, if they did take my name back, whether I would be able to then go back in the future and add my app back in again. Because one of the weird things about the App Store is if you add an app, like I added Mars Edit, right? Now, if I go in and I delete that app, I am not able to add another app called Mars Edit, presumably ever again.
Oh, yeah. Ugh.
Now, I don't know what the logic is behind that, because, it seems to me once an app is deleted, let me go put it back if I decide to.
It's probably not really deleted. It's probably just marked in the databases.
Inactive or something.
Bummer.
But anyway, so of course, as a developer, I don't want to give up my ability to use these names. They're kind of I could technically add an app called Mars Edit for Real and then just make that my App Store name.
Right.
And then the icon on the home screen could still say just Mars Edit.
Yeah.
But you and I both know that is super, super lame.
Super lame. The sad thing is that's common now, especially if you look in the, like we just talked about Twitterific. Twitterific kind of had to do this with a new version. And I think their current version is called like Twitterific for Twitter or something. It's like the actual name in the App Store is this kind of ridiculous long thing. I've seen a few apps that do that, and it's just lame. I mean, it's sad that that's required.
Yeah. Well, so anyway, back to my point, I believe that if I upload, so here's the thing. If I don't upload something, I'm going to lose my names.
Yep.
I'm, to be honest with you, I'm not prepared to share any of these apps with the public just yet. Some of them are closer than others.
Mm-hmm.
But so my sort of course of action for the past month has been, I've gone all full time, except for support and little bug fixes here and there. I've gone all full time on iPhone development. That's great. I have to thank Apple for sort of motivating me to do that with this deadline. it's easy for me just to get caught up in all the things I need to keep doing on Mars Edit for the Mac, for instance. In a way, it's very good that they have motivated me to get serious about this. But I have a situation now where I'm going to upload apps to them, which I really do not want to see the light of day.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm uploading apps that I believe are close to or actually will be approved by them. However, they are the lamest. I guess I shouldn't say this about my own software, but they are the lamest feature cut, bare bone implementations. I basically took everything I had done for these apps and cut off anything that wasn't finished. And, and whatever features are left, that's what is going up. Anyway, we'll see what happens. Here's what I'm hoping. What I'm hoping is that by uploading something with a future release date, that I can sort of like stave off the great name reclaim of 2010, and then buy myself a little time to finish up the, you know, the polish.
Mm-hmm.
I'm willing to have 1.0 be a feature, low feature
sure.
version.
Yeah.
But there's just a lot of rough edges, and I'd rather clean those up.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking at some point I'm going to upload 1.0.1, which is what everybody in the world is actually going to see
right.
as the first release.
Yeah.
So the question is, do I have to let 1.0 go public for this like week or more period when the second one is in review?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll find out, I guess. But if that is the case, I think what I might do is make the price like $900. You know?
Yeah, but someone might buy it. That's the problem. Like,
I know, but boy, I will send them like a plaque.
Right.
You are the best Mars Edit customer ever. The one who paid $900
yeah.
for the version that was too embarrassing for me even.
But
sell.
You know what would happen though? This will backfire because you will get so much press out of doing this that I don't know that more people would find out about the app than you want. I mean, I think you want to like fly under the radar.
Wait a minute, Manson. You just said this will backfire. You will get so much press.
I know, right? But I mean,
son, let me tell you something. A little something about publicity,
right?
I see. I hear what you're saying. I don't know.
Well, you want to fly under the radar and not make a big deal about 1.0 until the new version is out. But honestly, I mean,
you mean I don't want to go doing things like talking about it on extremely popular podcasts,
right? I think it'll be fine. I think you just fiddle with the date and or reject it after it's or you know pull it from the App Store after it's already live, and I think that'll satisfy Apple. But it is weird though, and I mean, I know most people when their app is about to be approved, they'll set the date that it shows up live, like a little bit in the future, like a couple of days or whatever, to give them time to control the launch of it. So maybe they want it to launch on a morning and they want to get their marketing stuff. I was so impatient to get Tweet Library out that I said, you know, forget it. When Apple approves it, it's going live. I don't care if it's midnight.
Okay, that explains why it went live last
night. Yeah, it pretty much was midnight. Just because, and that was my whole philosophy. I wanted to get it out there, and you know, it's not perfect, but I think it's unique and valuable, and I want to see what people think. And I'm not going to wait around until it's the perfect day that I have all the documentation ready. When Apple approved it, it was live, and then I had to scramble to actually. Because there was a bunch of stuff missing from, I didn't have my marketing site done, and the screencast wasn't really finished or anything. So, but the point is, you do have control over that date, and I think you can make that work to your advantage. Hopefully, in this case,
I guess the synopsis is because I did set the date into the future,
mm-hmm.
and I guess the synopsis uncertainty is once you have an approved app. With an approved, an approved app with a future release date, is there a way to replace that binary with a newly approved binary? And that's what I'm going to have to find out. Or maybe somebody out there knows for certain because they've done that. But ideally, I'd be able to replace it with another 1.0.
You gotta be able to, because think about the case that you ship an app and it deletes all the data, or it has some major problem that you have to pull the app, right? I mean, it's the same thing.
Yeah. Oh, we'll see what happens. Yeah. Hopefully I'll be able to do that. Anyway, long story short is everyone who's been, I use this term affectionately, everybody who's been bugging the crap out of me about iPhone software, you guys are closer to in luck than you would be if it wasn't for this Apple Squatter deadline. So thank you, Apple, for putting the fire to my ass. And, you know, I have to say, really, it has been nice getting into the iPhone thing again, getting my momentum going a little bit. You know, I have to say there was a learning curve that as time went on, the learning curve got worse, you know, got steeper and steeper because Apple's adding more and more stuff.
Oh, I know. I wish they'd slow down. Seriously, because I was about to ship and then, oh, here's the 4.2 beta. Right. And like, oh, great. And of course it doesn't work. And half my beta list has already upgraded.
They need to do some Mac OS 10 development, right?
I need to chill out. Exactly. They need to take a vacation and then work on 10.7 and then that'll be good. All right. Well, let's wrap it up. It's good talking to you, Daniel. It's been a while since we recorded. Hopefully we can get on a more sane schedule.
Sounds good. All right. Talk to you soon, man.
Okay. Bye.